Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men Podcast. We are back once again. Football is gearing up every day and eeks closer and closer to a point where we'll be able to talk about things that Liverpool do on a football pitch, and it's going to be amazing. This podcast will be amazing regardless, though. I am joined by the Red Men TV's own Mr. Tom Dutton. Hi, Tom.
Hello, everyone. This is decidedly earlier than we usually film. I'm like picking out the sleep out of my eyes, and I've got decaf coffee, which I was telling the lads is just the worst. You expect like a hit of energy and it's just a drink. It does nothing for you.
Tom, it's 11:15. I know. It's not like we're filming at 7 o'clock in the morning.
I know. You know me in mornings, that's what I'm going to say.
Absolutely. Tom is an afternoon guy. James, James Sutton, what type of guy are you? Are you a morning, afternoon?
I don't think anyone's a morning person, but my normal filming day often starts at like 7:30, 7:45 in the morning. Like I'm in makeup for like 7:45 and I'm on set on camera at 8:30. So you kind of
45 minutes, James.
Yeah, I mean, some people need a long time. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't need 45 minutes.
You're not acting in an X-Men film, mate. You know
what I mean? But yeah, I'm normally pretty good by about 9:30. I'm normally okay. This is my second cup of tea, and I've already had a cup of coffee, so I'm pretty perky.
Nice. And my dad, Mr. John Machin. Dad, I haven't seen you in ages. How you doing?
This is true.
We are on the subject of people being morning people and not morning people. No. You're not a morning person, but your brother or one of your brothers is the archetypal morning person. He's a man who's got the Hoover running around at 6:30 in the morning.
He gets up at 6:00 every day. I used to stay in bed until he'd gone to school, so I didn't have to be anywhere near him. I was late to school every day because of that. He was just obnoxious. He still is, of course.
Quality. Right, okay, the warm-up question this week. I don't know whether this is inspired by anything political in any way, shape or form, but Liam Edward Phillips asks, what is your worst away trip experience you've had? I mean, I'm not saying Dominic Cummins had a particularly bad time on his trip. It sounds like he had a wonderful time, all told. You know what I mean? He could see where he was going, apparently. You know, we got to celebrate, I think it was his wife, but it doesn't matter. Let's not get sucked into all that. We're going to do that on the Machin Page, our podcast this week. My worst away trip experience, like you'd think it would be like one of the ones where I've traveled a mad distance and we've not won a game. So it could be, you think it'd be Kiev. It's not. Kiev still remains one of my best aways, even though we didn't win the Champions League. Basel, the same. My worst away is Newcastle, and we got battered by them. I can't even remember the score. And I was 3-0. We lost 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, whatever it was when Gini Wijnaldum scored. And I had the flu, but didn't realise I had the flu. I just thought I was really poorly and pushed through. And me and Chris drove, and there'd been floods. So all the roads, we kept coming down these country lanes, and because we'd chosen to go the more interesting drive because we're morons. And every time we drive down a country lane, we'd come to a body of water and be like, well, okay. So we turn around and try and go around and find another country lane. So it took us like 4 hours to get to Newcastle. We then had to climb up the highest stand in the history of football, which is, I mean, apart from, I think that might be, barring maybe the Bernabeu, that's the furthest away you can get from the pitches and away supporter. And yeah, we got absolutely battered. We had to drive all the way home, and then yeah, I was in bed for 3 days afterwards with the flu. So yeah, that pretty much tops it. James Sutton, what is your worst away experience?
Yes, it's similar to you. Like I've been all over Europe, and we've lost. But there's something about a European game that I don't. It's the whole experience is kind of a lot of fun. I remember we played West Ham in God, it was probably about 2010, 2011, I think. And again, we lost. But driving down there with my mate, his gearbox decided to just implode. So we lost first gear quite early on the journey, which is quite an important gear.
Yeah.
And then we were approaching the M25, and this was when they had the old West Ham ground. And you remember that was a real ball ache to park. You had to park and walk miles up this long high street. We lost second gear when we got to the M25, so we literally just had third, really, and fourth. So we kind of crawled to find a car parking space. Oh, come in. And just the whole thing was utterly miserable. By the time we got there, we were despondent and fed up. And then I think we lost like 1-0. And I always hated going to West Ham anyway, because they're just a bunch of knobheads and bubble blow fucking. So, yeah, just an awful experience.
Yeah. Dad, what about you? Worst away experience?
I haven't had too many bad experiences, to be honest. The worst was probably when I went to Fulham by coach. When I was a kid, I must have been about 14 or 15. And my mate had stolen 200 senior service cigarettes, which are unfiltered, very strong cigarettes. And we just smoked ourselves to death all the way down. I remember it was the famous game that St. John got sent off for having a fight in the middle of the pitch, when Peter Thompson held the arms of the guy he was fighting while St. John punched him in the face. But yeah, sick as a dog because of the cigarettes. That's about as bad as it got.
And the amount of shit you give me for smoking at 17 as well.
And this is for why, sure. Mate.
Tom, what's your worst away?
Unequivocally, it's got to be Napoli away. It was a day trip. So we lost as well, but... So me and Ross go there, we fly, and we stop at an airport. So the stress of getting across the airport, we ran across this airport to get there, finally get to Napoli, and then we're set about, we have a pint, and it's like, okay, stress is over. No, you got to go get a bus, you get ferried around for like an hour and a half, 2 hours or whatever, and then we finally get to the game. We lose the game, obviously, because he dives over Robertson's leg. And the noise is deafening, and I'm just thinking, oh my God, this is just horrible. But then that's not even the worst part, because then we've got to get back. We get a taxi to the airport, and this fella's driving like an utter madman, just all over the road, undertaking police cars. And I'm like, what's going on? We finally get to the airport. The airport's shut. So we have to sit outside. I'm doing the post-match work, you know what I mean? So I'm sat outside this airport. We end up having to sleep on airport seats, waiting for this plane. We finally get the plane. Again, two stops. We get back. Me and Ross then walk from the airport to the office. Walk in. I get the car and I'm driving home. And as I leave work, I get stopped by police and get dumped for not having valid tax or insurance. I can't remember. So I got points. I had to then go do a driving awareness course. So it just compounded. It was one of the worst, like, 3 days of my life, because you're there, no sleep at all for however many hours. It was
you win.
I think we can all agree. Can we all agree, watching at home as well, that Tom absolutely wins? That is the worst away trip.
Ross will back me up on that. We both had such a miserable time. Oh my God.
If you'd only, all you needed really was some unfiltered cigarettes to ruin the rest of it, and you'd have been on the way. Right, okay. Yes, everyone watching and listening at home, if you're watching on YouTube, do drop a like on the video right now. It helps. So that's really good. And if you're listening on podcast apps, leave a 5-star review. Again, we're going to climb up those podcasting charts. Because why not? Everyone likes to be on top. Right, we ask, as ever, our guests to bring a topic of conversation. To kick things off, I'm going to start this week, and I want to talk about the Premier League coronavirus testing. So there's another round that's currently being undertaken, I believe, yesterday and today, Monday, Tuesday. So far, there's been 8 positive tests returned out of a total of 1,744 conducted in the first 2 rounds, which equates to 0.45% of the test coming back positive. Bournemouth's Aaron Ramsdale was the latest player who's asymptomatic, who's been tested positive, and it's been leaked. And I like one of these funny things about this, James, is they keep going, it gets announced, so this number of people have tested positive, and because of medical confidentiality, it cannot be revealed who those people are. And then you wait like 20 minutes, and then the names get lashed out. And then, obviously the government are setting new levels of bullshit around this, but then you have to wait for the reasonings. So, like, Aaron Ramsdale was like, God, I think I got it on a shopping trip. But, like, all told, look, it should be said, I mean, that's a reduction. It was 6 in the first round. It was 2 in the second. It does feel like we're on an unstoppable sort of train now towards footy coming back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if you look at the other countries that have, you know, that they're they call it the R, don't they? Or the infection level if you look at the other countries that are doing well, we are following in a similar vein. The problem will be if we get the Premier League back and then the level goes up. Even if it has nothing to do with football, even if, like you say, you know, someone's caught it on a shopping trip or, you know, in the park, football's going to get blamed. And that's what the FA and the chief execs have to deal with is to try and you've got to maintain football's good name. If we need football back, not just for a lift for everyone, but the amount of people who work in football, not just the players, but there's so many staff who, you know, their lives are depending on this. Yeah. So we have to restart the Premier League. We have to get back. But the problem will arise if the level goes up. But fingers crossed that doesn't happen. But it does seem to be, there's been quite a few Brighton players, hasn't there, I believe, over the...
Actually, you know what? I don't want to comment without knowing the full info.
Watford, isn't it? Watford, okay, yeah.
Watford had some staff.
Like, imagine one player in that team gets it and it just ravages a whole team. So you're talking about Bournemouth and injuries this season. They just got ravaged and they struggled so hard in the Premier League. You watch them; they basically didn't have a first 11. It will be interesting to see if people just get it, whether they're asymptomatic or not, and they're just like, you can't play, and then they lose 5 starters. What's going
to
happen then?
I wonder whether that's why Bournemouth are going to be an interesting case to watch, Tom, because I'd not thought of it from that perspective. But as a team, as you rightly say, who were ravaged by injuries this season, you'd imagine they would be taking this very seriously, because they are a much better outfit than they've shown this season. Eddie Howe's a better manager, but he's been hamstrung by a lack of quality available to him. And I wonder whether, because I'm kind of leading into a Liverpool chat, Jurgen Klopp is not messing about with this, and he's never has. If you remember the Atletico game, like, he was bollocking people for reaching out and trying to shake hands and touch hands with the players. I mean, maybe someone from Liverpool will come back positive at some point, but Premier League clubs, that should be the impetus. And you'd imagine, conspiracy theories aside, that should be an impetus for all of them, because if they're being told the game's coming back regardless, if you're losing players because you've not quarantined effectively, then it's going to be on them. They're going to suffer on the pitch for it.
Well, we were speaking to Vicky Jepson. We did an interview with her, and obviously she's part of that Liverpool collective. And she was saying, for the past month, they've sprayed the houses of every single player. So that's the Liverpool women, and obviously the men. They go around and spray the houses now to make sure that it's fully disinfected and they're fine. So in terms of Liverpool, I think you're right. From the top down, they've just gone, right, everyone, your houses are getting sprayed. You need to take this serious, because... Well, we're on a title challenge still, you know what I mean? We're still going for the top prize. I think the way they've dealt with it's really good, actually. The way they've just gone, right, everyone do this. And I'm really proud of Liverpool, and I've said it on a podcast a while ago, of how Liverpool have dealt with this in terms of covering it and showing it off and acting on it as well.
I think, Dad, there's a vote this week, isn't there, on Wednesday, I believe, about whether they're ready to return to full contact training. And that's where the real acid test of this is going to be, isn't it? Because obviously once the players start getting a bit more shoulder to shoulder, and then if you're losing players to, you know, testing positive, what then happens to the groups of people?
I mean, I think once the Germans restarted, I think it became inevitable that we would do that. Yeah. And I think the only thing that will stop it now is what James was talking about, is the R rate. And if there's a second spike because of all these daft people going to the beach and stuff like that, which happened over the weekend, and if the Tories letting the, you know, easing things off probably a bit too soon, if there's a major spike in the community, then that might help halt it. Other than that, I think football's inevitably coming back anytime soon now.
I think you're right. I think that's where it's at, isn't it? It very much feels... like that, because of
and look, you know, again, at the risk of it being a bit too political, they're on the path to reopen and everything. They want everything reopened because that's who they are. So a big, major, multi-million pound industry is not... They're going to want that to come back. You know what I mean? As you say, it's going to take exceptional circumstances.
They want the economy back up and running, basically. So they'll do everything they can to get that working as soon as possible. Football is part of that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
do you think that if the R rate does go up in the general population, do you reckon that'll have much of a burden on footballers and footballer?
Well, it depends on what public opinion is.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a massive spike, I mean, the second spike in the 1918 flu epidemic, that was what killed everyone. The first one was a few tens of thousands. The second one was millions.
Mm.
You know, if the death rate goes through the roof, then there's no way anyone's going to think football is appropriate.
Yeah.
But they also are probably the most well-protected people in our society right now.
And they're the fittest as well. So they're the fittest.
They've got their own medical staff. They're being checked. You know, they're being tested twice a week. There's no expense spared. There's no stone unturned in trying to resume the Premier League.
Yeah.
The problem might arise if there is a second spike, like you say, and the death rate does go up. The media will immediately jump on football. I mean, it's such an easy target, as we know. And then that becomes a problem. If on the front pages of all the newspapers is football returning at the same time that there's a spike, suddenly public opinion becomes, well, this is absurd, you know, and it's irresponsible of the Premier League. Well, actually, it's not, because these guys are, you know, like I say, they couldn't be more sort of protected, assuming that they follow the protocol and assuming they do everything that they're told.
That's the key to it, I think. You're right, is that, because the Aaron Ramsdale actually says, the Bournemouth keeper, he's like, since I've been isolated, it's not ideal, but obviously the club have been great. They're saying, if you need anything, we'll sort it out for you, even dropping food off. And it made me think, they should have just been doing that in the first place. I wonder if that, you know what I mean? Like, because you need to minimise these things. And we saw it with the Bundesliga. You know, there was a coach, and actually his name's completely gone out of my mind at the moment, but who went out, broke lockdown and the team hotel to go and buy himself like a toothbrush. And you're like, and there's a great, we actually did the Bundesliga roundup show for week one, and Chris Williams tells this story brilliantly. And he didn't have his room key in the end, so we had to like phone someone to get him back into the room. And all. It was one of those like stupid nightmare situations, but you're right. The theory should remain the same. And again, the public opinion's the only thing. If it then knocks on to footballers' side of things, because we're already seeing N'Golo Kante said he's not coming back to training, and Troy Deeney said he's not coming back to training at the moment. Anyway, I think football will. I even if there's a spike, the public opinion thing might have a change in it, but it might be just it. Unless the footballers down tools and demand to not play, I still can't see it being enough to stop.
No, it is their complete right to do that. That has to be remembered. That even if we get to the stage where there's some really high profile names that teams rely, you know, Virgil van Dijk, for example, massively important for us. Without him, there's a gaping hole. If he says no, I'm not comfortable playing. You have to respect that. There can be absolutely no argument. It's the same with my guys going back to work at Hollyoaks. We've had chats and we've had phone calls with the producers and stuff. And there is a really open forum for, if you don't feel safe, if you feel like you're at risk, it's absolutely cool.
Can I ask, James, how would that work? Just as an aside in TV sense, because in football it works because you just put another centre half in. I mean, in a light artist, this is just going to be James Sutton's face on a stick. You know what I mean? Are you being CGI'd into Hollyoaks again if for some reason, or using old footage?
There's so many contingency plans in place. There's literally levels of contingency. So if everybody, if we resume filming soon and everybody's available, that's the script and that's the storyline and that's the characters that we'll use. If that doesn't happen, then we drop down to this, and then we drop. So there's I mean, the script writers and the producers and the execs, I mean, hats off to them, because this is, I mean, this is a literal nightmare for storytelling on screen, because you've got these plans in place that are, you know, spanned out for, they're 12 months ahead in terms of their storylines and their scripts and stuff. And then you say, right, well, for 3 months, we're not going to be filming. Oh, and by the way, when we come back, it's going to be completely different and you might not have some of your cast. Yeah. Like, I don't know how you get around that, but when you come back,
you're going to have COVID-19. So
exactly. But that's the other thing as well, is that not to take it away from football. I don't think any of the soaps are mentioning COVID-19. I don't think any of the shows are actually referencing it, because you kind of can't do that. You kind of
apart from the Archers.
It has to, but it has to just be kind of business as usual. Otherwise, you're changing your whole story arc for 12 months.
Yeah. That's a good point, isn't it? Well, that's real life, isn't it? That's just an interesting aside. I thought that was quite fascinating. But you're right. I mean, I get people's take on this, because it's been said in the latest round of government advice on the restart that if the second phase goes ahead, the return to contact training, then footballers are allowed to basically opt out. And it says they should be allowed to do so without prejudice. But I ask your opinions on this. And obviously, I think most of you will feel the same way, but feel free to take a different stance. Don't feel I'm railroading anyone into this. If you found out that a Liverpool player, like Mohamed Salah or whatever, pick any Liverpool player, it can be anyone from a small to a big superstar, decides not to play, would it change? Would you have an opinion on them?
I feel like I feel like a lot of people would feel like they'd down tools on you, to be honest with you, because a lot of people would be like, well, I'd play. And it's like, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that black and white. I think it's really tough.
I mean you just have to say, well, if they play and they get infected, then, you know, more people are going to get infected. If you're not happy, then stay away.
Yeah.
I'd be more concerned about if your team's getting relegated, how many suddenly go down with coronavirus?
Yeah.
And what did the FA or Premier League do then?
Well, hopefully at least the attendance is independent. But yeah, sorry, go on, carry on.
What if the whole team just decides, say Watford, for example, everyone decides to back the captain, Troy Deeney, and goes, well, he's not playing and we don't want to play without him. And then what happens if Watford just declare, no, we're not gonna play as a team? That'd be really interesting to see. I don't think it'll happen, but I think if enough players kind of...
I think the thing that's telling on all this is the vast majority of players, the vast overwhelming majority of players, just want to play footy. They're just lads. They've built their whole lives towards this. You know, they're playing at the pinnacle of sport. You know, they just want to get out back to kicking a ball around again, really, don't they, James?
Well, we're all itching to go back to work. All of us, you know, in all walks of life, you know, we're all, you know, but like proper, you know, I'm sure you're itching to get back in the studio and do, you know, the proper content and get out, you know, there's a huge proportion of Redmen TV and Anfield Rap work that's completely changed, and you just simply can't do. We're all itching to go back to work, and footballers are no different. They want to get back, you know, on the pitch. They want to be getting their match bonuses. They want to be getting their goal bonuses, their clean sheet bonuses. Let's not forget, this is a business and everyone's taken a financial hit. Doesn't matter what sector you work in.
Yeah. And let's not forget, James, that you know, football careers are finite.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
These are not guys you have, you know, this is not like, this happens in all industries, particularly, you know, creative industries and what have you. But, you know, you only have so many seasons.
You've got a shelf life. Imagine you're a 33-year-old player right now. You might have, you know, in the Premier League, I can't think of one offhand. James Milner, for example. Although I think he's probably got a couple of seasons left in him. But, you know, someone...
David Silva's a good example.
Yeah,
David
Silva, exactly.
Who's leaving City.
Probably, you know, might only have a season of sort of top-flight football left in them. And all of a sudden you're being told, well, you can't go to work. That must be infuriating. You'd do anything you could to get back. I appreciate what you're saying about, you know, perhaps, you know, a whole team, you know, like Watford saying, oh, we don't want to play, but I just can't see it, because people are desperate to go back to work. I know I am. As long as it's safe to do so, and as long as, you know...
Well, especially if you work for something as nice as playing football.
Yeah, exactly. Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want that?
It's going to end up. I mean, I think there's a balance. I think the vast majority of footballers do want to come back. You've got a couple obvious exceptions, and they're being highlighted because it's a talking point. You know, you're seeing Danny Rose has been quite vocal about it. Troy Deeney has been quite vocal about it. And, you know, look, again, people are entitled to opinions. And Golo Kante, because he's not a big character, I don't think that's been a big story. But I'm sure within Chelsea fans, I've seen a few Chelsea fans reacting negatively. I think the vast majority, again, would support, because you support your best players. But it's interesting that I wonder whether this falls under like the which players you protect and which players you don't. Like, I mean, Liverpool, we've got perfect track records of those kind of things where you throw behind Luis Suarez because he's Luis Suarez, but maybe we don't jump to the defence of a John Flanagan in the same way because, you know, it doesn't matter to people. Whether it'd be interesting to see if Liverpool do end up in that situation. I don't think they will, but we never know. It's something we'll have to cross when we get there, I guess. Okay, let's move on then. Dad, you wanted to talk about when a manager should start a rebuild.
Yeah, I was thinking about, I mean, obviously there was the Istanbul anniversary yesterday, and we all knew that Rafa took a team that was absolutely, you know, rubbish, basically, took it to a final and won. But very quickly started to rebuild that team. Similar happened with Kenny. We won the double with a team which was, you know, not really very good at all, and he started a rebuild straight away after that. And they were both new managers, so you would expect them to start changing. But it's interesting for me. What do you start to rebuild when you're on top? When you've got great players, and like if we were to sign Timo Werner, you know, that would be a great addition to the squad. But is he going to have a starting place? Is that the start of the changing of the team, or is he just being kept waiting for the next change? Is that going to come further down the line? I mean, yeah. And Shankly famously failed to change his squad early enough, and it took a really bad defeat at Watford for him to suddenly realise that Tommy Lawrence maybe wasn't the goalkeeper he used to be, and, you know, there were players who needed to be moved on. It's an interesting dilemma for me, and I think now that we are really at the pinnacle, that it is Klopp already thinking about the next lot.
I think it's fascinating. It's something I did a video on recently, Tom, about you building from a position of strength. And Timo Werner is a great example of this. And the other one was Calvin Koulibaly. Is that I don't think Liverpool will buy, by the way. But if you Liverpool are the best right now, it's whether there's another year in us being the best. Is it Preston or not? Are you right? Do you Liverpool have historically sold their best players and then frantically scrambled around to replace them? Now we don't necessarily need to do that, but also can we do that? Because as the point is there, you can buy Timo Werner in, but is there enough games to satisfy a top quality player in this side? Can they get it? Let's use Naby Keita as an example, and maybe it's his own body that's let him down a bit. But, you know, you spent £50 million on Naby Keita and he's never played more than like a 10 games back to back. It is an interesting dilemma.
It is, yeah. I mean, the way that Liverpool play at the moment is amazing in terms of everyone knows where everyone needs to be. When the fullbacks go up, the midfielders slot straight in. And whenever you see the pressing, everyone knows exactly where they're going to go. So I think it's interesting. If you were to bring Timo Werner in and then, let's say, change to a 4-2-3-1 with him at the striker position of that, do you then... You're theoretically jeopardising some of Liverpool's best years to kind of elongate the best, if that makes sense. So we could lose games because we're trying to enact this system when we could just kind of stick with it. But then I think John's right. At the end of that, then what do you do? You're then stuck. You see it so many times where a player comes in out the cold. We saw it in the Champions League final where a player comes in out the cold and it just doesn't work because they're not ready. And
I mean, if you look at someone like Torres, who was absolutely brilliant, suddenly wasn't. How do you legislate for, say, Mo suddenly losing his form?
Yeah.
You know, if you've got, you know, Divock Origi as his replacement or Shaqiri, then your squad, you know, your team is going down a notch. So, you know, you've got to think about those things, haven't you?
So yeah, the Last Dance documentary, and you see it with that's the issue you face is do you push every ounce out of your team that you've got and keep that team together? But then, I mean, this is kind of what Man City are faced with this season, sort of, where, you know, Aguero's still just about at the peak of his powers, and obviously De Bruyne, but like Silva's on the way down, Fernandinho on the way down, and they've obviously just got rid of Kompany, etc. We had this, Liverpool had this in 1990 as well, didn't he? You know, the last league title we won was very much the last hurrah for that team.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I mean, that was the post-Hillsborough team, wasn't it? And I think they'd shot their bolt and they needed to move on. And it's crucial, you know, how you change your side. And if you leave it too late, you know, you're going to start struggling to get enough people in to build up a new team. Or it's certainly going to take a while to bed them in. I mean, look at Liverpool in the 60s. They went from 66 through to, you know, the early 70s without winning anything.
Yeah.
And maybe if Shankly had changed things a little bit earlier, we'd have been, you know, winning things earlier too.
It's the making of a great manager, isn't it? A man who can recycle teams. I mean, Ferguson was fantastic at it. I haven't watched football for as long as all you have, but he's the one who sticks out for me in terms of being able to take teams and gradually just evolve into something.
Yeah, you've got to, if you're bringing in a new player every year who's going to get into the team, maybe, you know, in the after a while, you know, like if you bring in a player, it takes under Klopp, it takes 3 or 4 months minimum before they really get into the team, and you know, you can, that's sort of a permanent rebuilding, if you like. It's sort of gradual. But eventually, you know, some of those players we've got now coming to the end of their 20s, they're probably going to hit, you know, 30s round about the same time. You know, it would be daft to wait until they're all 32 before you start thinking about changing. Yeah.
And it's worth remembering that one of the points I made on the video on my channel the other week was, you've got so many talented young lads there as well who are just on the periphery, that there's a degree to which, yeah, you do need to top up. The world-class talent needs to be periodically replaced. If you're lucky, you can't bank on your young players becoming that, because it's so very hard to become that. But what they should be able to do, the bare minimum, is save you a ton of money by filling your side out and filling your squad out. You know, look, if you can get a tune out of, we've already got a tune out of Trent to the tune of him being the best right back in the world. If you can get Curtis Jones to be a squad member, if Nico Williams can be a squad member, if Harvey Elliott can be a squad member, then you've probably saved yourself about 150 odd million, you know, just in that, which means that all of a sudden, you know, people laugh about the Mbappe thing, but this is what Barcelona do. They just go out every 2 or 3 years and buy an amazing footballer who's the best in the world and keeps the system going. That's the aim, certainly.
We've never had it in my generation, in our generation. This is all completely new to us. It's always felt like, you know, under Rafa, it's, you know, under Rafa, under Kenny, it's under Brendan. It's always felt to me like we're building towards winning the league, and that's the goal, is winning the league. And the few times that we've come really close to that, we've then immediately fallen off the precipice and had to completely rebuild.
Yeah.
Whereas for the first time in our natural lives, I'm only talking to the younger members of this podcast. Apologies for that. But we've got an opportunity now to build a proper dynasty a la Ferguson of the 90s and the noughties. And if we drop the ball now, it will be criminally disappointing for everyone if we don't build on this. You know, even I'm talking post Klopp. So if you look at it, the kind of wider context, it's some teams aren't afforded this opportunity. Like if you're a West Ham fan or Newcastle, you're constantly building towards either not getting relegated or winning a trophy. But to rebuild to such an extent that you're constantly redeveloping, like what you're saying with bringing in the youngsters, adding to that a couple of world-class players every season or every other season, before you know it, you're constantly evolving. And with any luck, the trophies and the titles should keep coming.
The key to all of this is the league title.
Yeah.
Because every time Liverpool have had to rebuild, I was talking to David Thompson on Monday, and like his ear is interesting because he comes through in the crop with like Gerrard and Carragher, but by the time he's establishing himself, the senior players are Fowler and McManaman, who've not won what a League Cup. You know, McManaman won the FA Cup in 92, but they came in under the tutelage of Rush and Barnes and Molby, who'd won everything you could win in that Liverpool side. You know, you need to have that. That's what Ferguson did. He just had this chain where you had these old guys who knew how to do it, and then your young guys then learned from them. They did it. They became the old guys. Your young guys learned from them, and it's a perpetual winning machine.
Yeah,
we shouldn't forget we've got owners as well now who are really supportive.
Yeah,
I mean Rafa was trading one player for another to try and improve the squad. I mean, Klopp doesn't have that problem.
Yeah,
you know, we can go out and buy the players we need. In fact, 100%. They actually figure out it well in advance, don't they?
And they want to come and play for us.
Yeah, that's it.
You can already see it with Henderson and Fabinho. I mean, it's kind of different. Henderson's only 29, but Fabinho's 26. But like, it's literally a changing of the guard. Henderson was there, now he's not. Fabinho, maybe Henderson came back and kind of took that space back. But Fabinho was the best defensive midfielder in the world at one point. You're just watching him put in performance after performance, and that is it. It's having that basis, maybe only a few years apart, but it is. It's growing that team and being consistent.
And those lads are, you know, let's look at it this way. Fabinho and Naby Keita brought in effectively to replace Jordan Henderson and Gini Wijnaldum. And what's happened? Henderson and Wijnaldum have just gotten better. And they've gone, no, you know, maybe there'll come a point where I can't do it anymore. But if you want to oust those lads, you're going to have to be amongst the best players in the world. And that's the perpetual cycle of hunger and winning that Liverpool haven't had in the Premier League era at all. Now, really interesting stuff. Please give us your thoughts on it in the comment section underneath, or tweet at the Redmen TV as well. James, you wanted to talk about footy behind closed doors. I've been watching the Bundesliga stuff. I think there's some clever ideas. I think there's some stupid ideas. I think there's a whole host of things. What have you got for us?
Well, let's just throw some ideas around, man. Basically, so we all watched the Bundesliga, and on the one side, we were all absolutely thrilled to be watching competitive, you know, proper football of a really good standard come back. You know, the Dortmund team, you got, you know, there's big names in there across the board, really. But I think it left a lot of people feeling pretty flat. You know, certainly, you know, we watched 45 minutes of it, and I sat with my wife and she was saying, like, this is crap. Like, this is really crap. So I was sort of thinking about, you know, ways that you could make for the viewer, because obviously when football comes back, it's going to be behind closed doors. No one's going to be in the stadium. So then your kind of remit, if you're the if you're in charge of Sky Sports or BT Sports or whoever, is trying to make it more accessible and interesting and worth watching for your fans. So I was just wondering what ideas you lads had to kind of make it a better watching experience for us, really.
So I think the first example, because I haven't watched the first two weekends of the Bundesliga, Borussia Mönchengladbach's decision to have the cardboard cutouts of the fans in the stands sounds mad, but it looked I don't want to hasten to say it looked good, but it looked. It looked okay. Like it was a bit funny. It was, you know, it was a bit when you've got that behind looking at the goal kind of angle, and there's just faces in the crowd, because you don't look at the faces of the fans. You know, you realise this when you're playing footy games on the PlayStation or whatever. They've like the animated. They've got some really good 3D animated people now in stands, but you rarely pay attention to it. It's just noise, isn't it? It's just background. You filter it out, but you can't filter out empty seats. And when you've got empty seats, it makes you naturally think it's unimportant. This is why we have such little respect for Manchester City.
I mean, some of them have covered up the seats, haven't they? With whole sheets, like they do with building sites, you know.
Yeah.
And you can paint anything you like on them.
I think the
important thing is, and it's what's missing in the Bundesliga, is that they're not our teams. There's no competition for us. If we're playing City, then that's going to be an exciting game to watch, whether it's behind closed doors or not.
Yeah,
that's the thing for me, is like you hope that the Premier League football kind of speak for itself and that kind of thing. But it's got me thinking there, especially Anfield. It would be nice to just have like the flags waving for the whole time in the cup. And I don't think that would be too hard to do. I mean, not even people, just get machines that wave them. There must be flag waver machines.
Tom,
look, you know, Kevin McAllister managed to convince two crooks who were at the windows of his house that his house had was full of people having a party. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I think socially distanced people on the cop operating a series of pulleys and levers to maneuver, you know, cardboard cutouts, make them move up and down, make the flags move. You could animate the cop, I think, relatively straightforward. Where's the Jim Henson
Creature Workshop? They should just run from wherever the ball's going to be, or they should just run to that part of the pitch so that the camera will pick up the crowd.
How does everybody feel about music being played in the stadiums?
I was thinking about this.
Because it's something I've seen a few people on Twitter talking about over the Bundesliga weekend. Would be like, maybe you could have like different playlists from different players. So if you're going to... bear with me. So yeah, Sky have always had their red button. And I know BT do a thing where like you can choose your camera angles and stuff. And I think like football coming back in this country is a real opportunity to make like a really interactive version of football. So maybe there's like playlists, so you could play like Andy Robbo's favourite tunes whilst watching it. Maybe there's, you know, you could listen to Shaqiri's music in the second half. So you could have like, you could have fan and player cams, you could have music. I'm just thinking outside the box of ways, because listening to a ball being booted around in an empty stadium and is not the one, really.
You've just gone from to atmosphere, basically an atmosphere track of what's happening in the to play music, and totally glossed over playing like crowd noise. You've gone to like party classics, playing like disco hits in the stands.
Yeah,
I mean, the simple answer is
about pumping crowd noises in, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, the crowd noise is fine. I don't know whether you do that in the ground or not, because I know the Bundesliga, they're not doing it in the ground, but they're doing it by the broadcast. So the German television, you had the option in Germany whether you could have it with the crowd track or not. The American, I believe a lot of the American broadcasts just receive the feed with the crowd noise, and it's dynamic as well, so it's being produced. It's not like just someone pressing play on a YouTube video they found with 90 minutes of atmosphere. It's dynamic to how the action's going and how the home team's attacking, and there's, so
was there any was there any reviews on what that was like? Did you see
the Germans I don't think the Germans like it, from speaking to the experts on the Bundesliga roundup. Because they're so keyed in and clued up on the role of the fans. They don't like the idea of hello Sasha, of someone replacing what the fans do, which is why Mönchengladbach had an empty, their ultra section was actually left empty without the cutouts and that kind of stuff.
I've got a really good idea. Let's just do it on the radio. Who's going to know any different?
Yeah, it'd just be
exactly the same. You won't even know there's no crowd there. Well, as long as you don't have John Aldridge on all of them, because he just has my heart in, you know, tatters.
I was thinking though, if you're going to do dynamic crowd noise, could you just bring in an orchestra, and like when they're playing it round in the middle of the park, it's just really low, and then when you get to the goal, it's like the violins are going, all the drums are going. That'd be amazing.
Like the Jaws music.
Who's that famous composer who does all the massive movies?
John Williams, Hans Zimmer, or Danny Elfman. Absolutely.
No, Williams, that's it. You have a full orchestra, perfect.
That'd be amazing. He's the Tottenham would be able to still use Duel of Fates from The Phantom Menace, which is a bit weird. But yeah, no, I think the Jaws music, I definitely get behind that. It's dramatic. Whenever someone's chasing someone down, someone's running with the ball, Fabinho's chasing you down.
The Benny Hill thing.
When Shaqiri's got it.
Yeah. Whenever, if Joel Matip's gone on a mad run and suddenly finds himself on the edge of their box.
You'd have that Keystone Cops one where Salah's running down with everyone chasing him.
This is what I'm talking about. Thinking outside the box, lads.
I think this might be it. On a serious note, I mean, I think Liverpool, whatever they do, I hope they do something. And I think Liverpool have progressed enough as a football club that they're brave enough to try stuff. Because there's a big thing with Liverpool is that we hate everything naturally, I think. You know, I if you told us that... oh, my God. Father Christmas was here for a second. If Liverpool just decide to do something, that's, you know, it's going to have to be capable. But you've got Spy and Kop there, you know, 1902. And I would just say to them, what do you want to do? What do you think we should do? Because the thing is, all the flags and banners all live in the Kop anyway. You know, like, they don't bring them the game. They're kept in storage at Anfield. So all the flags and banners are already at Anfield. And whether you like a mosaic up the Kop of every flag and banner, that's, you know, there's maybe something to do that. I like the cardboard cutout thing. I wouldn't mind. If you told me for 20 quid or 50 quid or whatever it is, Liverpool are going to donate money to like the LFC Foundation, or, hey, it's going to actually, you know, help to cover the shortfall in something, I would have no problem. If they're going to refund me my season ticket, I don't mind letting them have 50 quid of it to have my face as a cutout on the Kop or something.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, I think we've nailed that, gents. Lastly then, Tom, you want to know why Gerrard's not rated as highly as he should be?
Yeah, this is off the
back of... Because you spent too much time on the internet, Tom.
Well, it's mainly Twitter. But, you know, it's off the back of the West Ham final was on the other day, the FA Cup final. Obviously, Istanbul yesterday. But it seems like, I don't know if it's just banter, and maybe it is, and maybe I'm just looking into it too much, but I don't think people rate Gerrard as highly as they should do. And it's all because of a slip. And it's always because, like... It's the slip, and it's the talk before it, the game before. But he's like, we don't let it slip, and he slips. It's ridiculous. But I think the way that a lot of people on Twitter, a lot of younger people on Twitter, just disregard him as some player who's not even that good. I saw one the other day, Yaya Toure or Steven Gerrard. Now, Yaya Toure is unbelievable. One of the best players I've ever watched in my life. He doesn't compare to Gerrard. He just doesn't do that. And then they all cite Premier Leagues as if that's a thing. But Gerrard basically gripped everyone and won us the Champions League. He's won us FA Cups. He's got us as close as he can get to winning a Premier League as well.
All the top teams as well, that's all worth remembering about Gerrard, is that, like, Man United would have been all over Gerrard if they thought it was possible. Chelsea wanted Gerrard. Real Madrid wanted Gerrard. He was the best midfielder in the world. In around 2005 onwards, he excelled. He went to that next level. I don't know if you've all seen this. So the ex-footy player and boxer Curtis Woodhouse has been going big on Twitter, nailing ex-Man United players and stuff. And he's kicked off all kinds of fuss. But he made a point about Ryan Giggs. And I think Ryan Giggs is the best left winger that, you know, pretty much at the Premier League scene, because you can't argue against his the trophies he's won. You can't argue against his longevity, and he played in that Man United side, which was the best side in the Premier League for all that time. So one of the best players ever to play in the league. But he pointed out he very rarely averaged 5 goals a season, and very rarely got more than double figures assists in a season. So all of a sudden, like, the silverware thing, I think, is used to defend
poor quality players or lesser quality players. Sometimes, and you're right, I think it boils down to banter. I don't think you're ever going to get an argument from any of us that Gerrard wasn't the best midfielder probably in the Premier League. But while he doesn't have, I mean, like Jason's example, when he doesn't have that Premier League, it's something we're always going to have end up having an argument over.
Yeah, it honestly frustrates me because you watch some of the performances. I mean, people have put compilations of just singular games. I think there was a Newcastle one. Obviously, there's the Real Madrid one where he just decimates these teams, absolutely decimates them. And I think it is because people have just forgotten. People are just don't. It's been so long since he's played a game at his peak. I mean, you can watch him in the six. He was fantastic, but that wasn't his peak. It's when he was running beyond. It was when he was getting fed the ball from Xabi Alonso, that kind of thing, where he was able to show his skills up further up the field and get goals and assists there. But it's baffling to me. I just don't understand.
I think I appreciate him more since he retired. And when I see him on clips these days, I don't think while he was playing, I realised how brilliant he was at passing the football.
Yeah.
Some of the range and the different kinds of passing with the outside of his boots and, you know, just absolutely brilliant stuff. You didn't really notice it in the game. You just knew he made a good pass. Yeah. You know, I think he probably is still underrated.
Do we think, James, that he's probably rated more highly on the continent than he is in England because of the banter factor, because of the England factor maybe, and because, you know, look, this is a kid who won the UEFA Cup in 2001. He single-handedly almost won the European Cup for us in 2005. He's the captain in 2007. He's probably got a better reputation for people who don't have an inbuilt hatred for Liverpool.
I think it's almost a perfect storm. I think you've got the sort of banter from you know football accounts on social media. And look, you know, let's not mess around. Liverpool are the most talked about, written about football club over the last 5-10 years. We are the most famous, most popular club in the world. Arguably right now, you've got Barcelona up there. But in terms of English clubs, we're ahead of Manchester United. So in terms of being written about and spoken about, everyone wants a piece of that. So you've got that, but you've also got the fact that, yeah, you've got the slip and Gerrard never won the league. It's almost a perfect storm of all these elements coming together that leads people to, and I think if you scratch the surface, I think a lot of it is banter because you'd have to be a special kind of dickhead to not recognise that Steven Gerrard was probably in the top three players in the world for a number of seasons. Yeah, but you've got to be a special kind of knobhead to not recognise that. I mean, I've read some nonsense in the past. I mean, people are bored at the moment and they want to be edgy and they want to say stuff. But some of the shouts, like you say, Yaya Toure. I mean, the Paul Scholes comparison keeps cropping up as well. And I'm like, Manchester United players don't even put Paul Scholes in their favourite 11. So to say that he's better than Gerrard is just an absolute nonsense. But
I think there's a problem with being English as well.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think English players get the recognition they deserve.
No,
you know, in the awards, for instance, in something like the Ballon d'Or, you know, Gerrard never came really close. Yeah. You know,
that's true, isn't
and,
it?
You know, Torres had one good season and came third in a season where Gerrard was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's an odd one, and it'll always exist, I think. And I think the problem is the banter. Yeah. After a while, when banter lives long enough, it becomes accepted as truth by people who are too young to recognise when it became banter. Mm-hmm. So you've probably got a bunch of people who don't really know footy and didn't experience it firsthand. It's like you accept that certain players were amazing. Like I know that Kenny Dalglish was amazing. But I never got to see live amazing Kenny Dalglish because I was too young. But I just accept it because of it's osmosis. I've learned that as fact. But you can do that wrongly as well. You can learn wrong facts. You can be indoctrinated to thinking stupid things. I mean, again, let's look at politics at the moment. Let's and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I know anyone who thinks Gerrard wasn't absolutely world class is just an absolute idiot. And I think we can all agree on that, right?
Yeah.
Special kind of dickhead. I think you summed it up nicely there, James. Right, okay. Just one question then from the audience. We're going to be doing the subscriber Q&A over on the redmentv.com, which is a continuation of this podcast answering your questions, one of which comes from Aaron Hudson, who says, given that no one can be there when the league is won, what are your at-home celebration plans? Has anyone thought this far ahead?
It's really hard. This, like, is it bad that I just want to have a pint and smile? You know what I mean?
Because, no, that's fine.
Because I don't want to have a massive party, because it depends what lockdown's like at that point. But if it's like it is now, I don't want to go to the park and celebrate, because then you'll just get filmed and get labelled as dickheads by the whole rest of the country, and I'm gonna go, oh, see, that's what's happening. But I don't want to go on a Zoom call. I don't want to do that. I feel like just going, having a can or a pint.
Bit limbo of alcohol, that's about as much as
I
Yeah. It was funny because when we won the Champions League, obviously last season, we got back in the early hours, didn't we, Dad? And then I'd come into work and I bought some bottles of champagne and stuff for the office. And I just put a picture of me swigging off a bottle of champagne because I didn't really get time to properly let it soak in and sink in and all that kind of stuff. Like, but yeah, that's probably what I'll do. I'll probably shake a bottle of champagne over my head or something just to get the full experience. But yeah.
Throw yourself in the bath, Paul.
Yeah, in the paddling pool, Dad. I'll be in the paddling pool with a cigar and a bottle of champagne. I think that's probably me. Probably about as good as it's getting.
Same proper James. Scarface. Yeah. Proper Scarface. It's sat with you. Oh! I always have this
room.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I guess, like, yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't know. We don't know what the lockdown situation will be, but that's the most important thing, is that we have to abide by the rules and not embarrass, you know, ourselves or the wider kind of football community, because all eyes are going to be on Liverpool. And if anyone goes and congregates outside Anfield, but like that, I will scream.
Yeah,
absolutely scream, because it's been talked about and spoken about and written about and commented on by people who, you know, some of them have absolutely no right to label football fans or Liverpool fans as people that might, you know, break lockdown rules. So just don't give them any ammunition at all.
Yeah.
Stay home, get drunk, sing some songs, get on social media, and, you know, yeah, do that.
Yeah. I think there will be some quite creative stuff. No, I think even if people will jump on GTA and recreate the Liverpool bus going down the road. People do that, and people like go on games and recreate stuff or make images. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how the club deal with it, to be honest, as well. Okay, celebrate with people.
So you're suggesting a party on Fortnite, Tom? Okay, cool. I'm cool with that.
I'll go and stand on Queen's Drive on my own.
Just waving at all the buses go past the Arrivas. Just like,
yeah, absolutely.
I'm gonna drive to Manchester and just play Liverpool songs with the windows down and just drive round and round and round all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, that's a point. Let's not congregate at Anfield. Let's congregate at Old Trafford instead. Right. Okay, we're going to wrap that up there for the main podcast. We're going to continue this over on the redmentv.com. It is the subscriber exclusive Q&A show, including questions such as, if you could change a TV series that failed or disappointed with either the last episode or last season, what would it be and how would you change it? Favourite dinosaurs? Recasting the sitcom of our choice within the current LFC squad. And a whole host of other things. They're all interesting, odd, weird, and occasionally tangentially related to Liverpool and football. So go to the redmentv.com and sign up, and we'll see it over there. There's also some great content. I interviewed David Thompson this week, former Liverpool midfielder, Jimmy Traore a few weeks ago, which was absolutely fantastic, Jose Enrique. There's loads of interviews now from Liverpool stars past and present, all building up there in a wonderful little archive. You can go and get involved. Again, go to the redmentv.com and sign up. Yeah, and Sasha the Cat will join us as well. So if you need more happiness in your life, then look, the Cat will join us. It'll be fine. See you all soon. Ta-da.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free.
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.